Havana, Hava, 3-1. Could you tell me, first of all, something about your family and educational background?
Yes, my family originally comes from Augsburg. We have been bankers and merchants, and later on we probably lent too much money to the royalties, and we went out of business, but we had business with Italy and also with England. And later on we acquired quite a lot of property, landed property in Upper Bavaria, but all that is lost because the different lines died out and nothing was left for my line, which went to Württemberg. But it was also perhaps interesting, we had one Herrmann who emigrated under Louis XIV to France, and he was Inspecteur de Finances, responsible for the finances, and he financed the war of Louis XIV against Germany. And he was a Protestant, and when the Edict of Nantes was
revoked,
he emigrated to, his son and his nephew emigrated to England. And one Herrmann became a minister under King William, Queen Mary, to the Swiss Federation, and was also a member of Parliament. And I think one Herrmann married a daughter of this Herrmann, married in Haldane, another Oswald, St. Oswald. So there, and we had also some went to Russia and so on. So we were a rather international family. And my father was an officer, and he followed the general staff course in Berlin. So I was born in Berlin, and I went to school in Baden, opposite of Strasbourg, and also in other parts of Germany, because my father moved quite a lot. And I went to university in Berlin, Breslau, and Munich, and I passed my exam, took my degree in law in Munich. But I worked also during my studies. I worked also to earn money or to do something else. I worked in a factory which constructed railway engines for half a year. For a moment, I had the idea to become an engineer. And later on, I worked for 2 years in a commercial firm which was in the oil business. And then I took my degree, and then I entered the firm. I was very young, at the age of 23. And I was first I tried to improve my English in England, or learning in France my French. And my first assignment was, after service 3 years in Berlin, and also following courses in history, national economy, and international law, I was assigned to the embassy in Paris. And then afterwards I was transferred, to the great astonishment of the family, they thought it was a punishment, I was transferred to Moscow. But it was my own desire, because I wanted to know what is communism. He knew what National Socialism was, and didn't like it very much. And I wanted to know what communism was. And I soon discovered that communism was also nothing, not very good for me, because they killed all the aristocrats. But I went over to find out what they really were, and if they could perhaps be of some good for the world and humanity. And the great advantage of Moscow was, it was a very small diplomatic community. The embassies were very small, 6 or 7 diplomatic members, only 26 missions, and we had a society of friends. The members were the Americans, the English, French, and Italians, and ourselves. And actually also some Swede came, but mostly it was this union, the Society for Mutual Glorification, as we called it. And my friends on the British side were Fitzroy McLean, for instance. From the American side, Chip Bowen, George Kennan, Charlie Thayer, only to give some names. There were also Polish friends, Henryk Sokolnicki, the counselor, and so on. So we cooperated together. We exchanged our views, and we were, I would say, allied against communism because we didn't like communism, and we were convinced that the system, most of our, not everybody, Spitzer McLean, Juniac from the French embassy, and myself, we were convinced that the Soviet system had to go down because it was against economic reason and against the human nature. And we thought that it couldn't last longer than 100 years, counted from 1917. So we were wrong about the date, otherwise we were right. But there were many people who believed that the Soviets would be successful in building up a new system of state economy and so on. And I was also impressed by the enthusiasm of the young people until 1933. And in 1933 came the great change. Stalin suddenly blocked up everything against the foreigners, not only against the German embassy. All the other embassies were isolated too. But anyhow, I was there from 1931 to 1939. One of the reasons was that I had a non-Aryan great-grandmother, and so I was not... the Nazis thought that he's good enough for Moscow, but not for other posts. Well, it was a great advantage for me because you could learn a lot there. And I think from outside, you were much better witness of what was going on in Germany than you were inside Germany. I think that was one of the reasons why I was probably rather soon in opposition to National Socialism. Besides that, I didn't like them very much because they didn't favor me very much. That was also one of the reasons. But anyhow, I think...
How did they show their lack of favor for you?
Well, I didn't get any promotion and so on. At a certain time in 1937, I even thought of to emigrate. And I contacted my English and American friends. But I wanted to get out with the whole family, you know. I didn't want to leave my parents and my grandmother there. And then they told me, well, it's better you stay because it's much better the people like you stay, and we can't offer you a good post. And, well, I didn't want to emigrate without having good future. It was perhaps a mistake. Well, anyhow, so I was trapped, and in 1939, I was when the famous pact between Hitler and Stalin was signed, I was convinced that that meant the outbreak of the war, and that we would lose this war as we had lost the First World War. It was a housemaid could make this calculation that we couldn't fight against the whole world. And anyhow, I thought that the only possibility to get rid of Hitler was in joining the army, because only the army could get rid of Hitler. And I was perhaps... confirmed in this opinion, because in 1938, as you know, the army had the intention to take steps against Hitler in case he invaded Czechoslovakia. But Munich destroyed all these plans of getting a mutiny against Hitler. And I thought that probably there will be an occasion in the army at a certain point to get rid of Hitler. And therefore, I joined the army. It was the As my emigration didn't work, as the internal immigration to the army functioned. That was the reason why I entered the army.
Amongst your own class in Germany at the time, did you find that the rest of them agreed with your attitude towards National Socialism, or was there a division of opinion?
Well, I would say, if you give you examples, two regiments, Infantry Regiment 9 in Potsdam, and the Cavalry Regiment 17 in Bamberg were famous for their anti... critical of National Socialism. Well, you see, our mistake was that first we thought that things would develop in a very different way. We didn't expect that National Socialism would be as bad as it was. And we thought always that we could influence politics because they had no experience in politics. They would rely on the advice of trained people. That was a mistake. And even Chancellor Brüning, you know, who emigrated, he gave the advice to the young civil servants and foreign office, stay on, because then you can prevent many things. But that was, retrospectively, it was a mistake. I would say you can't. The anti-national socialism was growing gradually. First in 1934 was the Röhm revolt. Two generals were murdered. And then 1938, Fritsch, High Commander Blomberg and Fritsch were removed. And that was already, and the reaction afterwards was that we will help prevent Hitler to start a war against Czechoslovakia. It didn't work because he got everything he wanted, Sudeten area. And then nobody expected the outbreak of the war in 1939. I still, when I was already in the army on the 26th of August, and then Mussolini interfered, as you know, and he tried to bring the different parties to a conference like in Munich. And we thought that probably that would be, there might be a solution, and then the war broke out. And there was no time of reacting against Hitler, you know, we had only 3-4 days, and then the war broke out. And there were, before the campaign against France, there were also quite a lot of preparation and talks about doing something against Hitler. And then the attack against France was delayed from 1 month, from 1 week to the other. And so suddenly, at a certain moment when nobody believed it, it broke out. And then the war against France was an enormous success. And it was against a victorious leader, you can't do very much. And so I would say, to come back to your question, and as an anti-Nazi feeling was growing, but it was naturally it depended very much to which family you belonged. I would say on the whole, the aristocracy, especially the Catholic aristocracy, out of religious reasons, was not favorable of Hitler. But again, a person like Tresco, General von Tresco or Oberst von Stauffenberg, were at the beginning quite impressed by National Socialism, rearming Germany and fighting unemployment and so on. People were impressed. And then I think the change came when they realized what crimes were committed by Hitler, already in occupied Poland, and then when the shooting of the mass annihilation of the Jews started only after 1941. And that created then a very vigorous reaction, but I would say mostly in people, religious people who had a strong, who still believed in humanity and religion. And I would say, on the whole, you had the opposite of the communists as a sort of democrats. That was obviously because they were persecuted right from the beginning. And you had the resistance, I would say, from the aristocracy, and I would say especially in the south, but also in the north, was against Hitler. But that it became stronger and stronger. It grew.
And
it's very difficult to generalize, you know, one has to be very careful.
Coming back to Russia, do you remember the year that you went to Russia as a diplomat?
31, May 31.
Until?
39. I left on the 23rd of August. I joined the army on the 25th of August, 39.
And did you meet any of the Soviet hierarchy?
Well, naturally, I met once with Stalin. He gave one, that was an exception, he gave one party, he was Secretary General of the party, you know, he had no contacts with foreigners. And he made one exception when İsmet İnönü, the Turkish Prime Minister, came. The relations between Turkey and the Soviet Union were very, very close and very friendly. The Soviets hanged Soviet citizens who made it poor Turkish propaganda, the Turkestan people, and the Turks hanged every communist. But in spite of this, they were very good friends. And he gave a reception in the Kremlin, and there I met Stalin. But naturally, I didn't talk to him. And then when the first time we met him again was when the famous treaty was signed. But otherwise, he had later on, when he took over also the not only the party machine, but also the government machine, then naturally he met also foreigners. But I had already left Moscow.
Were you allowed to travel at all in Russia?
With restrictions. Well, you had to get a ticket through the foreign ministry, and if you wanted to go by car, you had to get petrol. And it was very difficult, for instance, in harvest time, it was very difficult. There was a shortage of petrol, and there were no filling stations. You filled out of a barrel, you know. There was only one filling station in Moscow where you went. So it was a restriction, but we traveled, but with difficulties. Well, I would say not traveling, making expeditions, you know. It was more or less expedition. I made quite a lot of things. The man who made the most adventurous expedition was Fitzroy MacLean. You know him.
Well, I've read his book, Eastern Approach.
Yeah, it's a very good book. Yeah.
What did you see on your expeditions?
Well, we saw first in 1932, we saw the terrible famine, people dying, and well, it was terrible because if you gave them some bread or something, you prolonged their lives perhaps for a week, and then they died. And you could, and as you could see, the positive impression was that in every village there was a school, and people learned to read and to write. So the educational system was a certain progress, electrification was a progress, and the building up of the industry was also quite impressive. It was a positive factor. And, well, the Soviet Union started to be really also criminal when Stalin started the persecutions and concentration camps. They always had the terror of Dzerzhinsky, the chief of the secret police was already famous during the Lenin time, but it became enormous under Stalin. And then during the famine, probably 10 million people died, which is also an enormous number, between 8 and 12 million. Nobody knows how many died, because the government just sentenced them to death, didn't send them any provisions. He said, You didn't cultivate the land, so you would die.
Whilst you were there, were you aware of the extent of the gulag system, what Solzhenitsyn called the gulag system?
Yes, we knew that. We knew that because, after all the people with whom we had contacts, also official contacts, they were either shot or disappeared in concentration camps, or were tried. No, we knew that. We knew more about the Soviet concentration camps than we knew about the German concentration camps. Let me put it that way.
And during this period, I think the German forces were doing some training in the.
Well, that was until 1932. It stopped. Most people believe it stopped 1933. No, it stopped only 1932. Well, we had one training station for pilots, which helped Hitler to build up his air force in a very short time. We had a station for tanks, one for poison gas, and we had an artillery factory and also an aircraft factory near Moscow. There was a very close cooperation. Russian officers participated in the German maneuvers, but it stopped in 1932 already. Because then Brüning started his policy of trying to come to terms with England, France, and to revise the Treaty of Versailles. And then the Russians were afraid to be stand alone in the rain, because the only allies were Germany, and they realized that we were trying to make all sorts of contacts with the League of Nations and so on. They were not yet members of the League of Nations. So that was the reason why they said we must try to reorientate our foreign policy, because the Germans seem to reorientate their foreign policy.
When you arrived in the USSR in the early 30s, did you feel that an armed collision between Germany and the USSR would be inevitable eventually?
No, impossible. We couldn't even imagine it. Because at that moment, the alliance of Germany and Russia was directed against Poland, and also it was a certain protection against France. We had no choice, you know. We were outcasts. The Russians and we were the only outcasts, so we joined.
So during your period in the USSR in the 30s, did you get a feeling that an armed collision would become possible?
No.
Even
after 33, Hitler, at the beginning, Hitler did not say attack the Soviet Union. It started only at the end of 33. Then he became very much anti-communist, and then one has the feeling that Hitler was very much anti-communist, wanted to fight communism, but we did not imagine that there would be a war between Germany and the Soviet Union. And the embassy in Moscow always worked for normal relations between the Soviet Union and Germany. We said these ideological fights are absolutely unnecessary. And so this rapprochement between the Soviet Union and Germany started, was a diplomatic offensive. And then when Great Britain signed a treaty of assistance with Poland, that was not yet worrying Hitler, because he said, well, the British won't interfere. They didn't interfere. The Czechoslovakia didn't interfere in Austria. They never interfere. They won't interfere if we do something against Poland. He was convinced of that. But then when the British and French went to Moscow to negotiate, then Hitler became nervous, and he jumped on this wagon of this diplomatic rapprochement between Germany and the Soviet Union, turned it much further and turned it into an alliance. But it was very interesting, but between 33 and 39, the commercial relations between Germany and the Soviet Union continued to be normal. The ideology had no effect on the commercial relations. It was quite interesting.
But what about Hitler's book, in which he talked about gaining land at the expense of the USSR?
Well,
did you read that yourself?
No. I had to look at it, but then I put it. I didn't read it to the end. Also, I didn't read Rosenberg's book. It was, in my opinion, not too stupid. You know, it didn't convince me. But naturally, it has a greater influence. But we saw at the beginning that somebody writes something and then he might change his mind. You see? That was a mistake. But anyhow, a war against the Soviet Union seemed to be impossible because between us was Poland, you see. We had no common frontier.
You said that you joined the army because you thought it would be the best way of acting against the National Socialists.
Well, there always Charlie Sayer, my American friend, and Fritz von Mertens, they both joined the army. Well, in wartime, if you want to have influence, join the army. One of the reasons. The second point, especially for a German, if you wanted to do something against it, you could do it. The army was the only possibility.
And was there any suspicion shown towards you about your own motives that you were aware of?
No. No, you see, there was a special situation in Moscow because there was no Nazi party. There was not it was strictly forbidden from the Nazi side to form a group there. We didn't greet Heil Hitler and so on. That was all. It was not done. It was an I would say the embassy in Moscow was an island. You see that? And we were far away from National Socialism, you see?
How well did you get to know Fitzroy McLaren?
Well, he was one of my closest friends. Also Trip Bowen, George Kennan, Charlie Thayer. We were really a brotherhood.
Where would you normally meet?
Pardon?
Where would you normally meet?
At the American Dacha, mostly. Or playing tennis. But mostly at the American Dacha. That was a meeting point.
And what kind of men were Kennan and Fitzroy McLean?
Well, Fitzroy McLean came from Paris, you see, and he was, he made the impression to be a very typical diplomat interested in social life, but after a fortnight we discovered that he was quite different, that he was just the right man for the Soviet Union. And Kennan was a great, he knew the Soviet Union really profoundly, also as a scholar. And Chip Bowen, too, was a great expert. He had been trained in Tallinn, in Iceland. They were well prepared. They were great experts. And Charlie Sayer, he came from West Point. He was a West Point man, but he joined. He was a brother-in-law of Chip Bowen, and so he entered the service then. And Juniac, the Frenchman, well, they were all good experts of the Soviet Union then.